Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Timber Living Log Cabins. For your perfect workspace, living space or hideaway, timberliving.ie.
Okay, I think you're going to love this story now. This is an extraordinary story of brotherly love. Reuben and Manny Coe, you're both very welcome.
Thank you very much for having us.
And Manny, you live in Spain. You're talking to us from there. And Reuben, you are talking to us from your home, which I know is in assisted living in the UK, in Dorset, I think. And guys, you've created a book together. And listen, Reuben, can I tell you that I read a lot of the book through tears, and I'm not usually one for that kind of thing, but they were not sad tears. They were tears because it's such a beautiful story. And can I say that Reuben and Manny, you were both, each in your own way, such poets. So anyway, Manny, you're going to do a lot of the talking because for reasons that people will understand as we go on, Reuben is kind of literally and figuratively getting his voice back right now.
Correct.
So,
yeah.
So Manny, you were 10 when your kid brother Reuben was born and he had Down syndrome. Your parents kind of took it in their stride, really, didn't they?
Yeah, my mum suspected something. It was her fourth pregnancy. It felt different. So it wasn't a complete surprise when we found out Reuben had Down syndrome. And we were all living in Leeds in the north of England when he was born and in a very tight-knit community. And it was a tricky time because there was a lot of sadness, there was a lot of silence, and yet we as brothers were just so happy that Reuben had come along and he was a joy from day one.
And Manny, do I get the impression, I mean, we tell the siblings of people with disabilities when they're kids, we tell them, look, you cannot make this your responsibility, you know, we are the parents and all that, but you tended to take responsibility for Reuben from a young age, did you?
We all did. I'm 10 years older than Reuben. The brother in between us, Nathan, is 5 years older. So I left home at 18, and really it was Nathan who brought Reuben up. They spent their teens together. And Matthew as well has always had a very close bond with Reuben. So I think the responsibility fell in quite naturally. But Reuben used to live with me here in Spain. So that's why I am sort of the closest to him.
Yeah.
Physically, and I've been involved in his life for the last decade, you know, in every way, because he was living with me here in Spain.
I think what's important as well is you say in the book, you need Reuben too. This is not a one-way street. You say in the book, his presence completes you. You talk about his hand filling the hollow in your palm. You say with him, you never feel lonely. Tell me a little bit about what you get from your relationship with Reuben.
I can really tell that you read and loved the book, Brendan. That's wonderful. Thank you. But I talk about the brother, the symmetry of our brotherhood and how he gives as much to me as I give to him. My need for him is as great as his need for me. And he really does complete me. That's a physical sense. When I hold Reuben's hand, his little palm fits in mine. And he completes me physically and emotionally. In many ways. I don't have my own children. I'm not a father. And even though I'm Reuben's big brother, my role in his life has been quite paternal for many, many years. So he's probably the closest I'll ever have to a son. And I wouldn't be without him, that's for sure.
Yeah. So look, the book tells about a certain part of your lives. And it's kind of the story of Manny, how you basically bust Reuben out of the care system during the pandemic. It was kind of a bit like in the A-Team when they used to bust that guy out. And Reuben, you sent Manny a text at that time, which is the name of the book. What did you text Manny? Reuben, can you tell me about the text you sent to Manny?
Brother, do you love me?
Brother, do you love me? And Manny, I can imagine that was a devastating text to get. Can we just go back, though, first a little bit, Manny? This wasn't the first time you had taken Reuben out of the care system. Will you tell me first about the previous time?
Sure. Reuben was in a care home, Mencap care home in Berkshire. And I was living in Spain and I thought he was okay again. Thought it was going to be fine. But gradually the care there got worse and worse. Reuben's state of mind started to diminish. He started to get really heavy. And he's never really been a heavy kid, but he started to get really heavy. We found out that he was hoarding and drinking by himself. No one was allowed in his room. His room was an absolute state. We used to call it dirty sheets, didn't we, Rubes? and then one Sunday I called him. Sunday's always a tricky day for me. I think Sunday was always about church when we were growing up. And now for me, it's not about church, but there's always a bit of a hollow on Sundays. And so I miss Rubes most on Sundays if I'm not with him. And I called him hoping that he may be at a pub having Sunday lunch with some of the carers or a worker or a friend. And Rubes doesn't lie. So I said, Rubes, where are you? I said, I'm in Sainsbury's. What are you doing in Sainsbury's? I'm buying vodka pops. And I just, it just really broke me that my brother was in a supermarket buying alcohol pops because he was so lonely and didn't really know what else to do with himself. So I had him come to me in Spain on holiday, picked him up in Gibraltar. He was last off the plane and he was dressed in his pajamas with a coat thrown over the top. And when I questioned the care home, said, why is, you know, how on earth did this happen? They said he wouldn't get up in time and the taxi arrived and we just had to throw him in the taxi in his pajamas. Hmm. And, you know, I picked him up and here's my brother, obese and not cared for and not clean and looking so sort of in a bad state. I said to myself, there's no reason that my brother has to be living like this. So I pulled him. He never went back to the house, never went back to that residency. And he stayed with me in Spain and had been living his best life with us here for 7 years.
So he had a very full life there in Spain.
Amazing life. He was happy. He was healthy. His weight came down. He started exercising, going to the gym. He was very independent, gregarious. Yeah. Friends came to visit and they said it was the best they'd ever, the healthiest and the happiest that they'd ever seen Reuben.
And Manny, if people think that you are a devoted brother, what was more surprising was that your partner, Jack, in a way, it seems to love Reuben and be as close to him as you are. At times, I almost thought more, which, you know, we all know it's easy to love somebody, a person who can be tricky or different to love. It's easy if they're part of your own family sometimes. If they're not part of your own family, it's not as easy, is it?
Not at all. And you're so right. Jack is an absolute diamond. And when Rubes had been living with me, I had a previous relationship that ended because my partner wasn't ready for the responsibility of having Rubes as part of our lives. And, you know, I said to him, if you're asking me to choose between you and my brother, then, you know, there's no doubt in my mind. So I was very aware that Reuben being part of my life, it could be tricky for me to find a life partner. And then when we met Jack, we were together on a plane when we met Jack. And there was an immediate bond between Jack and I, but also between Rubes and Jack. They very quickly became hobbits and started calling each other Frodo Baggins and Samwise Gamgee. Yeah. And yeah, you're right. It was Jack's love for Reuben and his dedication to him. It really, really surprises me and you know, leaves me speechless, really.
Yeah.
It's a wonderful bond.
Yeah, yeah. People can be incredible, can't they? So a happy time in Spain. I know that Reuben had a kind of a, I don't know, would you call it a breakdown, but he had a setback at that stage. So he was back in care then, and I think he was regressing very badly, and this was during the pandemic. So he sent you that text. How was he? What was the sight that greeted you? You came home from Spain straight away after that text. How did you find him?
I found him a shadow of who he is. I found him very frightened. He wasn't talking. From being so close and from always enjoying a real intimacy, Rubes didn't even want to be with me. He wouldn't eyeball me. Do you remember this, Rubes? I can't see him, but I bet he's nodding.
Mm-hmm.
Those first days were really, really hard because I've been depressed. I've been low in my life, and when you are in one of your lowest ebbs, you don't even want to be with the people that you know care about you most because you don't want them to see you so unhappy. And Rubes had lost his smile, and being with me made it all the more obvious just how unhappy he was. And so it was really tough. Those first days were really, really tricky for both of us. And we just had to go really gently. We spent a lot of time just sitting in each other's presence. I used a lot of touch. You know, we'd sit on the sofa holding hands, or we'd have a little cuddle before bed. I gave him lots of hugs because no one had touched Reuben for 8 months. And
oh my God,
he's such a tactile person. He loves giving hugs. He gives the best hugs in the world, don't you, Booba? And you do, babes, don't you? And so, yeah, touch was a big thing. We had to work on all of Reuben's senses. Many of them had been deprived and cut off. And so we went back to basics and just started enjoying being with each other, eating healthy and delicious food, listening to good music, smelling candles, and just seeing the world through very gentle gazes.
And you did this, you went off to a cottage out the countryside in Dorset, and it was essentially, I suppose it was months of you trying to slowly, from first principles, get Reuben to come back out or put Reuben back together, was it?
Yeah. Yeah, we went to a cottage, which we saw as our safe house. I was also paranoid, Brendan, that I may have brought the dreaded COVID into his life. I self-isolated for 10 days before I flew, and then flew through Gibraltar. But, you know, in the back of my mind, we were all paranoid back then, weren't we?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And many people failed to break their loved ones out of care homes for fear of passing on COVID. So I knew I was doing quite a risky thing. I didn't sleep for
days,
because I was going against the system. And I knew that if anything were to go wrong and I were to bring COVID to Reuben, then I would have had a lot of fingers wagging in my direction. I was very aware of that.
And the system and the doctors and everything were not in any way supportive or helpful to you in this, even though you could see the state that Reuben was in. Clearly, this wasn't good for him, but they really strongly discouraged you from taking matters into your own hands, didn't they?
Well, I had to tell a little fib. I told them I was taking him away for the weekend. he came, I told him just a little white lie. A weekend turned into 26 weeks. He never actually went back to the home. We went back to collect his things once the pandemic was over. We weren't allowed to go back in until then. And Reuben has been back once to tell one of the carers that he loved them. Because, you know, he listened in on my conversations. I was irate. I was very critical. And he didn't want to have left with an ill feeling because he's not like that. He hates discourse. Mm. So he asked me one day, there's that scene in the book when he asked me to go back to the house. And one of the carers answered the door and he simply said, "I love you." And then got back in the car, you know, very, very proud of himself because he needed to seal it off.
Yeah.
As well, because I took him, perhaps I took him against his will. The day before I went to pick him up, the carers saw a message that he'd sent to Mum saying, "Don't want to go, Mummy. This is my home." And this is the whole thing about caring for someone like Rubes, that had we listened to Rubes's intuition at that point when he was so low, he would have chosen to stay. And yet that would have been the worst decision.
Yeah.
For him.
Yeah. And you see, you deal with all these complexities very well. I mean, I think you're still torn in a way as to know what's best for Reuben and to know whether you let Reuben decide, as you say, what's best for him, even if he doesn't make the best decision. So
yeah.
I guess you have a question about, do you just take him into your life and your home and mind him forever? Or if he goes into somewhere like Fox Hill, where he is now, does he have a better chance of developing independence? So I suppose you have to watch your own motives in all this as well, do you?
Yeah, I do. I really do. And it's a very difficult question. It's a huge dilemma. You know, I know Jack misses him as much as me. We're a trilogy, aren't we, Rubes? The three of us. We've got a WhatsApp group called My Boys, haven't we, babes?
We have.
Yeah.
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 And, you know, Ruben completes us. We miss you, Rubes, when you're not here. We really do. And there is a question of, you know, is there a way that we could all still live together? That's hanging over our heads at the moment. But Rubes...
I know, Papa.
Oh, I know. And are you happy in Fox, Rubes?
Yeah.
Do you love it there?
Yeah, it's my home.
Good, good. And that's what we've always wanted, Rubes. We've always wanted you to have your home. We're very proud of you.
Well, I'm up, Syndrome, Papa.
Okay, Brendan, he's renamed it. He calls it Up Syndrome now.
Yeah, yeah. Because I know Ruben doesn't mind us talking about him in front of him, and he'll cut in if he wants to. But
yeah,
these are some of the other things that you're able to explore in this book that might be tricky for a lot of people, which is that Ruben has found it difficult to accept he has Down syndrome, and that's kind of it is part of his unhappiness, isn't it?
It's part of his long journey of self-acceptance, yes.
Yeah.
And when we had a clinical psychiatric assessment, when we went to the break, when we broke him out and we went to the cottage, coincidentally, there was a psychiatric assessment that happened the week after. I felt as if I was being spied on. I understood because they needed to make sure that Ruben was safe. They needed to make sure that his brother was looking after him and had his best interests at heart. So they sent a psychiatrist to the house. And as part of his assessment, he flagged that up, that Rubes, he would move through to a deeper sense of happiness if he could accept on a deeper level the fact that he has Down syndrome.
Yeah.
So that's happening. That is happening. And Rubes has renamed it Up Syndrome.
Yeah, he's dead right.
You don't have a problem with having Up syndrome, do you, Rubes?
No, Papa.
Good. Amazing. Which is fantastic, I think.
Yeah.
That absolutely makes my heart swell, because there was a time when he wouldn't have said that.
Yeah.
So Rubes is almost 40. Rubes is 40 this year, and we all crawl towards a steady level of self-acceptance, don't we? And normally it happens in our teens, and we know who we are as a young 20-something-year-old, we start to realise who we are. But for Rubes, it's just happening a little bit more slowly, that's all.
Yeah. There's another wonderful, not a moment of acceptance, but a moment of identification, I suppose you could call it, in the book. Do you mind telling me the story? Because it's such a beautiful story about something I know that was a really beautiful experience for you in your life as well, Manny, which is when Ruben came out to you.
Yeah. Do you remember that, Rubes? Yeah, it was very, very clever. Rubes is so clever. He's got an incredible imagination. He's very emotionally astute. And I came out to my parents when I was 21, and it made them sad. And I actually had to leave home. It was all a very tricky situation. And Rubes remembers how sad my parents were. So when he was questioning his own sexuality, he was reluctant to take that step because he didn't want to make mum and dad sad. And he wanted to talk to me about it, but didn't know how to breach the subject. And we were off for the day exploring England. I think we were in Oxfordshire or something like that. We went to this little village, and it did look like the village of David from Little Britain. And Rubes said to me, he said, "This looks like David's village, Rubes, Manny." And I knew straight away that he was trying to start a conversation. So I made it really easy for him. And I said, "Rubes, do you like men?" And he looked at me and he went, "Yeah, you like men and I like men." And I said, OK, babes, should we go to a restaurant and order a bottle of wine and talk about it? And he said, I wish I remembered which restaurant we went to, because we just rolled up at an Italian restaurant, ordered a bottle of rosé, and as two brothers and as two men and as two grown-ups, we sat and Rubes came out to me. And it was really simple and it was really beautiful and it was very clever. He's
yeah.
a very clever guy. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I can tell throughout. And actually, Ruben has a very sophisticated way of summing up the day or of communicating as well. His drawings will often just say everything that needs to be said. You love to draw, don't you, Ruben?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you're really good at it, I must say. Manny, you have a lot of what seem like quite simple but are quite profound insights in the book about how we look at people like Ruben, maybe. But you say at one point how Ruben perceives himself is based on how others treat him, right? So that if he's treated like a child, if he's treated like he's other, if he's treated like he's different, that word special and everything. But tell me then, for example, about being in Morocco with him, where there was a different kind of a cultural vibe around it and how he was different in it.
Yeah, that was Rubes and I went to Marrakesh, spent 10 days in the city. The whole trip was to fulfill two of Ruben's dreams, which was to dress up as Joseph in his Technicolor Dreamcoat and ride a camel in the desert when he escaped to Egypt. And the other one was to stand atop a bus in his mind, or a vehicle, with a huge silver train behind him, singing the aria from Priscilla, Queen of the Desert.
See, there's such an intersection of his various identities there as a gay man.
Oh, it was brilliant. It was absolutely brilliant. And this is why I love being with Rubes, because, you know, Rubes, where do you want to go on holiday this summer? Well, we could go to Morocco so that I could ride a camel dressed as Joseph. And so that's how it happened. And we were in the souk, and it was a Friday. I hadn't realized that it was the holy day for Muslims. And all of a sudden, Ruben, you know, a lot of people fail to meet, have eye contact with Rubes. They avoid eye contact. They avoid connection. And I don't think it's through ignorance. I just think it's through fear of saying the wrong thing, doing the wrong thing, offending somebody. And so I'm always aware of that when we take Rubes out or when we go out, that Ruben's aware of them as well. You know, people look and wonder and question. And for Rubes, it's quite isolating sometimes. And we were very aware of it as brothers. You know, we were always known as the brothers of Ruben, the guy with Down syndrome. It was part of our badge. Mm-hmm. We were very proud to wear it, but it was part of our badge. And this Friday in Marrakesh, Rubes was just a celebrity. It was honestly like walking around with David Beckham. Everybody was connecting with him, talking to him, saying hello, shaking his hand, giving him a hug. Women were coming out of restaurants with glasses of orange juice, and men were running out of stalls holding camels and giving him presents. And I said, Rubes, what's going on? And he said, I don't know, brother. Odd. And then it dawned on me, we were in the shop and this lovely guy asked if I could leave Ruben with him while I went on a little walk, you know. So immediately my alarm bells, I get heckles going, you know, that's quite a peculiar request. So I asked him, I said, you know, I get it. Rubes is a cool dude, you know, he's great. But why do you want to spend time with him? And I will never forget it. He said, being with your brother is an opportunity for me to erase the bad things from the pages of my life because he's so pure. And so he saw Ruben as almost an eraser of negative parts of his life because Ruben's so pure and innocent.
And you see, and Manny, I can imagine how on one level, you know, you don't want anyone romanticizing your brother like that, and, you know, in one level, but on another level, compared to the alternative of what you're getting in life in general, with people averting their eyes, you'd take that, wouldn't you?
Yeah, absolutely. And there was nothing, it was very natural, it was very sincere. Yeah. And so then it dawned on me why Reuben was a celebrity is because it was a Friday. It was their holy day. They were either on their way to mosque or just come back from mosque. And one of the five pillars of Islam is to look after people who are less fortunate than yourself and give alms. So these people were just living out their faith.
Yeah.
And seeing Reuben as an opportunity for them to show him kindness. So he was just laden with gifts. And it was so much fun. It was a brilliant day. I loved it.
Yeah. And back to how Reuben perceives himself is based on how others treat him. Because the world around him was different, Reuben became a different person and that became less disabled, if you want to put it that way, or less
totally.
Other. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's like a self-fulfilling prophecy, isn't it, Brendan?
Yeah.
Someone tells us we're no good, we end up believing it. And when someone is celebrated, they end up celebrating themselves.
And look, there's one other, and again, look, this is tricky, and I appreciate that we're talking in front of Reuben, but I know Reuben will object if he wants to. But there is, you do talk in the book about how, allied to all that, Reuben has a lot of people who love him, I can tell, but he does find it hard to make friends. And this it's a huge issue for a lot of young people and not so young people with disabilities. And I think it's a source of sadness for him and for you, isn't it? But you say people cannot and don't want to slow down enough to get to know him, is how you put it.
Very few people. We had a really telling experience on the Camino de Santiago, the pilgrimage in Spain that goes to Santiago de Compostela. And Nathan and Rubes and I walked the Camino. Nathan and I thought that we were taking on Reuben on a pilgrimage, and it ended up being a role reversal, and he ended up on a pilgrimage, yeah. And we had to walk in Reuben's shoes for 21 days. And it was a very isolating experience because we had loads of people who would meet us on the way and want to walk with us and talk with us, which is a natural process in the Camino. You meet loads of people from all over the world and strike up incredible friendships. But we had people saying, oh, we'd love to walk with you, but, you know, I've got to be in such and such a place by six to get a bed. Need to get going. I've got to get here by dark. And so we everybody just walked through us, and we never saw the same faces twice. And Nathan and I, who were very social, we were very aware that this was becoming a really isolating situation, and it made us think, bless him, this must be what it's like for Rubes.
He sees
people he would love to chat, but they're in too much of a hurry to actually sit down and meet with him on his level. You know, life is too fast. So Rubes takes, you know, Rubes sometimes, let's be honest, Rubes takes slow living.
Yeah.
Sometimes to the extreme.
I think you had a bit of what we call stop and flop on the Camino as well, didn't you?
Yeah. It was one day where Rubes just sat down in the middle of the path and said, I'm done, brother.
Yeah. Yeah. And that is the immovable object. We all know that one. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Yeah. But Rubes is where you are now, babes. He's getting on really well with his care team. And what do you call them, Rubes?
They are my people.
They are my people.
Excellent. And listen, that's what we all need. We all need our people, don't we, Reuben?
We do.
Yeah, yeah.
We do.
And it's just that, it's that one word, my.
Yeah,
they're my people. That's huge for us because it's not Manny's people. It's not Jack's people. Yeah. It's Reuben's people.
Yeah, yeah. And there's so much tied in there: agency and independence and everything. Yeah, yeah. Listen, what chance were you given of getting Reuben fully back to himself, Manny, when you first broke him out, and how is that going?
The clinical assessment was that I had a 10% chance of getting him back. And it was a really sad day for me because I believed it initially. Who was I to not agree with an official professional psychiatric assessment? Reuben had a regression, that's the term that was used, and he was locked in, he was nonverbal, and was shut down, really. And so 10%, wow. Really, really, really hit me hard. And so that was when my resolve kicked in. That's where my energy kicked in. Thankfully, I started this whole process quite pumped up with sun and energy. I'd been in Spain. My energy levels were high. My patient levels were high. So right at the very beginning, I thought, okay, this is going to be a battle. I'm ready for it. And I dug my heels in and said, right, I'm going to fight tooth and nail to get as much of my brother back as I possibly can. And we talk about it. Reeves is probably about 65, 70% of the way he used to be. He's much quieter. He moves more slowly. He walks in a different way. But he's happy now, aren't you, babes?
Yeah.
Bless you. And the lights come back to his eyes, Brendan. There was a horrific photograph taken by an amazing photographer in Bridport called Eddie Pierce. I love you too, Rubes. And Eddie took this photograph of Rubes when he was probably at his worst moment. And there is no life in his eyes. He actually looks like a prisoner. And horrifically, it sounds awful, but I downloaded the photograph to my computer and then right-clicked it, which Google will sort it according to sort of themes. And it ended up in a collection of prisoners behind bars, looking through their bars. That's how Google registered it. And you were unhappy at that moment, weren't you, babes?
What do you say, brother?
That you were unhappy when you were in the care home, and Eddie came to take a photograph of you through the window, the hand on the glass. You were unhappy then, weren't you? Yeah. And that's why he sent me the text message. Yeah. You know, it wasn't a question, was it, Booba? He knows I love him, Brendan. He knows I love him to the end of the earth. Yeah. And so when he sent me that question, the text message, it was really a call to arms. It was come and get me out of here. Don't know how long I can carry on for.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
Has the book been a big positive in your lives, guys?
Oh, huge. Huge. Rubes is sat with Gracie now, who is our publisher, Little Toller, and she's been much more than a publisher. She's now a dear friend. And we were living this, and I was writing it, and Ruben was drawing it in the middle of nowhere in Dorset. And we found Adrian and Gracie, Little Toller Books, through an old university friend of mine called Tash. I Facebooked it, and she called me that same day and said, I know exactly where this book needs to land. Introduced us to Adrian and Gracie. We met 2 days later, socially distanced croissants and coffee in their garden. I went with my manuscript and Rubes went with his 200 drawings, and they started looking at them and reading them and going through them. And then they just looked at each other and it was an instantaneous decision. They knew that this was something really special. They knew that we'd lived through something quite extraordinary. And you know, Ruben was nonverbal and his art was his voice. So when you look at his drawings, you can feel his pain, you can feel his struggle. And they took a very wise and a very expensive, I must say, decision to not clump Ruben's drawings all together at the back of the book, but to have them where they are appropriate within the story.
Oh, yeah. No, you couldn't have done that because, I mean, I'm not just saying this because Ruben is here, but Manny, you would accept that Ruben's drawings are as important in that book as your words.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think they coexist. I think they coexist. They sit with each other and one would be severely lacking without the other. Totally.
What would you like people to get out of the book, Manny?
Well, somebody asked me this question and I said, you know what I said? I said, what I hope for the book is that it gives Ruben his voice back.
Yeah, yeah. And you know what? And I think it is.
Yeah. And also for it to be a bridge for people to befriend and to have people like Rubes in their life as their friends, as their mates, as their buddies. You know, I'd like everybody who reads the book to run out and sign up to a volunteering scheme where they can, you know, take someone like Rube's Tenpin bowling every Thursday evening or some. Do you know what I mean? Rube's needs normal people and a normal relationship under normal circumstances. And as you touched on it before, it's tough, it's difficult, it's complicated. But when people reach out to him, he does have his special friends now. And they're beautiful people who have taken time out of their lives to be with Rube's. One of Rube's heroes and best friends is Tommy Boy. He's a very busy guy, kids of his own, radio DJ like yourself, so works extremely long hours. And he takes a day out of his busy schedule every sort of 4 or 5 months to be with Rube's. And I remember one day thanking him, saying, Tommy Boy, thank you for taking time out. And he said to me, don't get me wrong, I don't do it for Rube's.
Yeah.
I do it for me.
Yeah.
And that was really telling.
And Manny, I can tell you're doing it for you as well. And you know what? I think you seem like you're a very lucky guy to have the brother you have. And Ruben, you're a lucky guy to have the brother you have as well, I think, aren't you?
Boy, is my fifth brother.
Yeah.
Yeah, Tommy Boy is his fifth brother.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, guys, it's been just fantastic talking to you. And Ruben, I look forward to your next book. I really, really like this book.
Thank you so much. Thanks for talking
Manny,
to us.
Manny, thank you so much. Thank you so
pleasure.
Much. And the book is called Brother, Do You Love Me? Ruben and Manny Coe, thank you both so much.